Welcome back to the Deep Dive. I am really excited about today's subject.
Me too.
Because we are tackling this this invisible architecture, really, that holds up almost everything we think we know about health and disease.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to move past the common view. You know, the idea that epidemiology is just about pandemics.
Yeah, that it's just about outbreaks, which is understandable, but it's so much bigger than that.
It is.
We're doing a deep dive into Rodolfo Seracchi's book, Epidemiology, a very short introduction. And he presents the field not as, you know, this reactive thing for emergencies,
right,
but as the fundamental science of public health. It's really the cornerstone of modern medicine.
And here's the mission for you listening right now. This deep dive is meant to give you what you could call epidemiological literacy.
It's a toolkit.
It's a scientific toolkit. Yeah. So you can stop feeling so overwhelmed by all the conflicting health advice. You know, the headlines that pop up every day saying this causes that.
Oh.
This helps you sift through all that noise and answer the really big question. How do we actually know if something is good or bad for our health?
And the core idea, which Seracchi makes so clear, is that you don't find this knowledge by looking at one patient at a time.
No.
You find it by studying groups, whole populations of people. And when you shift your focus from the individual to comparing entire groups, you start to see these patterns, these causal links that are just, they're completely invisible otherwise.
Okay, so let's get into that. But first, who is the person telling us all this? Who is Rodolfo Seracchi?
Well, he lived from 1936 to 2023, and he was a really eminent Italian epidemiologist, a major figure in cancer research.
In his credentials, they really speak for themselves.
They do. He was the head of analytical epidemiology at the International Agency for Research on Cancer, or IRC.
Which is part of the World Health Organization.
Exactly. It's their specialized cancer agency. So this isn't just theory for him.
That's a really important point. His expertise wasn't just, you know, academic.
Mm-hmm.
It was forged in this very high-stakes world of global public health.
Mm-hmm. Where your findings directly lead to huge policy decisions.
We're talking about things like international rules on toxins or organizing massive vaccination campaigns.
And what's so interesting about his perspective is that he didn't see epidemiology as just, you know, number crunching.
Right.
He really saw it as a human science, one that has to constantly wrestle with uncertainty, with bias, with all the messiness of how people actually live their lives. It gives his work this grounded, almost philosophical feel.
So let's talk about the book itself. What is this very short introduction actually trying to do?
It's got a twofold purpose, really. On one hand, it's a primer, a concise guide to the science. But I think more importantly, it's about equipping you, the reader, with a new way of thinking.
An epidemiological mindset.
Exactly. It's a guide to thinking critically. And the book itself just follows this really logical path.
It's like a journey, right?
Yeah.
It starts with the history.
Yeah, some of the dramatic early stories.
And then it moves into the actual tools,
mm-hmm.
how we measure disease, how we investigate causes, and then finally how we apply all that knowledge.
And those tools are so fundamental. He starts with the basics of just, how do you even count disease? You can't just say a lot of people are sick.
You need to be precise.
You need precision. So he introduces two key ideas, incidence and prevalence. Incidence is the rate of new cases. It tells you about risk.
And prevalence is the total number of cases at a given time. That tells you about the overall burden on, say, the healthcare system.
Exactly. And without making that simple distinction, you're just flying blind.
And the utility of all this, it's massive.
It's everything. Think about smoking bans, childhood vaccinations, workplace safety standards.
All of that comes from this science.
All of it is built on decades of epidemiological evidence. So understanding it really empowers you as a citizen. Because you see that these big public health rules aren't just arbitrary.
Okay, now we get to the core of the science. And it starts with this foundational difference in the question being asked. It separates epidemiology from what a doctor does every day.
It's a huge mental shift. A clinician, your doctor, looks at you and asks, what is wrong with this person right here, right now?
And how can I treat them?
But the epidemiologist looks at a chart, a map, and asks a totally different question.
They ask, why does this group of people, this neighborhood, this factory's workforce, have a higher rate of disease than that group over there?
It's all about that comparison. And the story that just perfectly illustrates this is Dr. John Snow and the cholera outbreak in London in 1854.
Ah, the famous Broad Street pump story.
The classic. And what's amazing is he didn't even know what caused cholera. The germ theory wasn't a thing yet, but his method was pure epidemiology.
He literally just used a map of the neighborhood as his laboratory. He plotted every single death.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw it, this incredible clustering of deaths, right around one specific spot.
The Broad Street water pump.
Exactly. And then came the key step, the comparison.
Right. He compared the death rates of people who used that pump to people who didn't, like the workers at a nearby brewery.
Right. They were drinking the beer they made, which used boiled water, and they were mostly fine.
So he had his exposure, the pump water, and his outcome cholera, and he had a comparison group.
Which gave him the evidence to take action. He removed the pump handle.
And the outbreak subsided. It's revolutionary because it proves you can find a cause and prevent disease just with evidence and comparison, even before you understand the biology.
Okay, so that's a clear case. But what about when you can't just remove a pump handle? What about things like smoking, where you can't ethically run an experiment?
That's where the observational toolkit comes in. And these studies are really the workhorses of the field, especially for chronic diseases.
And there are two main types he breaks down. First, you have cohort studies.
Mm-hmm. Forward-looking.
Right. You can think of them like a surveillance team. You take a group of people who are exposed to something, say a chemical at work, and a group who aren't. And then you just...
You follow them,
sometimes for decades, just to see who gets sick. The British doctor study that links smoking to lung cancer is the classic example.
And the other type is the case control study.
Which is backward looking, like a detective showing up after the crime.
That's a great analogy. You start with the people who are already sick, the cases, and a similar group who aren't sick, the controls. Then you look back in time to see if the sick group was more likely to have had a certain exposure.
And that's much faster for rare diseases, right?
Way more efficient. But, and this is a huge but, Sarashi puts up a massive warning sign here.
Correlation is not causation.
Exactly. These observational studies are always vulnerable to two big problems, bias and confounding.
So let's talk about confounding. It sounds tricky, but it's such a critical idea.
Yeah.
Why is it the biggest trap?
It's the biggest trap because it looks so convincing. Confounding is when a third hidden factor is the real cause of what you're seeing.
Okay.
So the classic example he uses is the link between coffee drinking and heart disease. Early studies found an association.
Right. So coffee causes heart attacks.
Well, no. It turned out that in that era, heavy coffee drinkers were also very likely to be heavy smokers.
Oh, okay.
Smoking was the real driver of the heart disease. The coffee was just along for the ride. Smoking was the confounder. And the job of the epidemiologist is to hunt down and control for as many of these confounders as you possibly can. And that difficulty, that messiness, is precisely why the field developed what we call the gold standard.
A randomized controlled trial, the RCT.
Exactly. This is where you move from just observing to actively intervening.
And the power of it all comes down to one word, randomization.
That's the magic. When you randomly assign people to get either a new drug or a placebo, you're not just mixing them up.
What are you doing?
You are, on average, making the two groups identical. Identical in terms of their genetics, their lifestyle, their wealth. Every factor you can think of, and even the ones you can't think of.
They're all balanced out between the two groups.
They're balanced out. So the only significant difference left between them is the intervention itself.
And that lets you say, with a lot of confidence, that any difference in outcome was caused by that intervention.
It's the strongest evidence you can possibly get for causality. But here's the thing. Most of the evidence we have for big public health issues, diet, lifestyle, environmental exposures, it comes from those messier observational studies.
Right. You can't do an RCT for everything.
You can't. So the critical leap is, how do you go from a statistical association in one of those studies to a confident causal judgment?
It has to be more than just a calculation.
It has to be. It's about scientific inference. And for that, Sarachi introduces the Bradford Hill criteria. They're like a checklist for thinking through the problem.
A framework for reasoning.
Yes. A framework for building a case. And a few of the criteria are just so powerful.
Like what?
Well, first, the non-negotiable one is temporality. The cause has to come before the effect. That's obvious, but you have to prove it.
Sure.
Second is the strength of association. How strong is the link? For heavy smokers, the risk of lung cancer isn't just a little higher, it's something like 20 times higher.
Wow.
That kind of strength is really hard to explain away by some hidden confounder. And a third one is the biological gradient.
The dose response.
The dose response relationship. Does the risk go up as the exposure goes up?
More cigarettes, more risk.
Exactly. When you see that, the case for causation gets a whole lot stronger. You start to build this web of evidence from multiple angles.
And this all leads us to some really big themes in the book. The first one, which we keep hitting on, is just the power of thinking at the population level.
It's a total perspective shift. We're so wired to think about individual stories, individual cases. But the real insight always, always comes from comparing groups, whether it's cancer rates in different jobs or heart disease rates in different countries. That's where the patterns emerge.
The second theme for me was the complexity of causation. You know, we all want a simple answer. One cause, one disease.
But life isn't like that. Most chronic diseases, cancer, heart disease, they're multi-causal. Yeah. They're a complex dance between our genes, our environment, our choices.
And the science had to evolve to deal with that complexity.
It did. And theme three, which is worth saying again, is just how rigorous that journey is from a simple association to a causal claim. It's a huge amount of work to rule out chance, bias, and confounding.
It's not a quick process.
Not at all. And finally, theme four, how this science reveals the social determinants of health. It shows us so clearly that disease isn't just about biology. It's profoundly shaped by things like poverty, education, and access to clean water.
You know, throughout the book, there are these sentences that just perfectly crystallize an entire concept. They really stick with you.
They do. They're like anchor points for the whole field. The first one just defines the entire method, he says. Epidemiology's fundamental approach is to compare the occurrence of a disease in one group of people with its occurrence in another. Without comparison, we can observe, but we cannot conclude.
That's the whole engine of the science right there.
It is.
My favorite is the one about caution.
Mm-hmm.
Association is not causation, but without association, there is no causation.
Mm-hmm. It's the starting point.
It's the necessary starting point, but you can never, ever just stop there.
And finally, there's the one that's really the mission statement for the whole field.
What's that?
The ultimate purpose of epidemiology is not simply to describe and analyze, but to be an instrument for preventing disease and promoting the health of the public.
It's a pragmatic social mission. It's about helping people.
At its core, yes. So let's bring this home. How does all this actually help you in your daily life?
Well, this is the most practical part. It makes you a much more critical consumer of health news. So the next time you see a big, scary headline, study shows coffee causes cancer, whatever.
Right.
You now have the tools to just pause. You can ask yourself, okay, was this an observational study or an RCT? Did they even try to account for confounding factors like smoking or diet?
It lets you filter out the noise.
It really does. It lets you avoid the daily health scares and all the fads.
And it also helps you make more nuanced personal health decisions. Think about medical screening.
Oh, that's a great example.
You start to understand that just finding a disease early isn't automatically a good thing. You have to weigh the benefits against the potential harms.
Harms like false positives, anxiety.
And the really tricky problem of overdiagnosis.
Which is, when you find a cancer, for instance, that's so slow growing, it never would have actually harmed you in your lifetime.
Exactly. And treating it only causes harm. The epidemiological view forces you to look at the net effect on the whole population, not just one saved life.
And finally, it changes how you see public policy. Seatbelt laws,
yeah.
Smoking bans.
They're not just random rules.
Not at all. They are built on mountains of systematic evidence that proved over decades that they save lives on a massive scale.
So for me, the key takeaway is that Sirachi offers this paradigm shift. It's about moving away from a purely individual view of health, where it's all about your personal choices or your genes.
To a population-based one.
Yes. To understanding that your own well-being is deeply, fundamentally connected to the health of your community and your environment.
I think what I loved most was his underlying message. That reliable knowledge gained through this tough, systematic, rigorous process is our single most effective weapon against disease. He takes this super complex field and makes it feel so humane and accessible.
He really does. And so that brings us to a final thought for you to take away and chew on. Now that you have this epidemiological mindset, think about a public health guideline you take for granted. Something you do every day, or a policy you barely even notice anymore. What's the one you are now most curious to trace all the way back to its original study? See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.